We went to the Precious Moments Museum because we were bored, and we're working in Joplin, Missouri, and it's very dull. We stopped work at 3:30, so we had to do something to fill the rest of our day.
Yeah.
So we went to the Precious Moments Cathedral slash museum. The museum wasn't open. There was a vulture trying to get into the museum. They wouldn't let him
Stop.
in, for two
Like a
reasons.
bird.
Yeah, like a literal vulture. I have a video. It's a literal vulture trying to get into the Precious Moments Museum. He
They
couldn't go
wouldn't let
in.
him in.
Well, yeah, because it was closed. That was the main problem. But I assume they also just wouldn't let him in.
I mean, you
In
would hope.
general, he seemed very disappointed.
He's trying to see the precious
But we
moments.
went to like the cathedral. It's sort of like if you're it's here's the thing, it's free. You don't even have to be into Precious Moments when something's free.
Yeah.
They have a cute little garden that you walk through with a whole bunch of naked baby butts.
No.
It's like a little cherub Precious Moments.
No, thank you.
And then you go into the cathedral, and the cathedral's like painted, like decked out in just Precious Moments Bible scenes. And then you go like the outside, it doesn't have any windows in like the chapel space, but like the weird exterior, this is an oddly designed chapel. The exterior has a whole bunch of stained glass windows that are Precious Moments themed. And it's like all impressive because that much decoration anywhere, no matter what the theme is impressive.
Creepy.
Oh yeah. No, but we
I'm
went
just laughing
and
because you can hear mom telling him Paul to stop running around.
I know. We had went into this. The only thing knowing is the concept of Precious Moments is sort of based around dead babies. This is how we went in. We thought it was like a mourning process thing, which it sort of is, but it started before that. That got added later when the creator's son died at the age of 27 in an automobile accident. That's not to say that losing your kid isn't stressful, but we went into this thinking it was like they had tragically lost like
A
their
young
6-year-old,
child? Yeah.
which is a very different
Because you're
thing.
not doing any precious moments with your children when they're 27 years of
No, that's
age.
what was confusing to me because like the getting them for like, you know, life achievements and all that, the like the last one you get a kid is
What, high
maybe
school
their wedding one,
graduation?
maybe a wedding one. You really aren't giving them to your children anymore after that. If
The
you're
last
buying
thing I
them
want
as
on
a
my wedding day is a precious moment.
I do have to say,
No.
there were little gay Precious Moments couples.
Well, that's
We were
nice.
shocked because it is religious, and I don't know if that someone had gone and like messed with the display and nobody noticed, or if they meant it. Who knows? Dogs barking. The other thing we did was go to a cat cafe, and then we went to a museum and they had cats in that one too. I don't know. Joplin loves cats.
That's funny.
The museum. Oh my gosh, we were in the museum, and the museum was the funniest thing in the world because it was just like a whole bunch of local people's collections that had been donated.
Yeah.
And so, like,
After
someone's
they died.
entire cookie cutter collection was donated. Someone's entire miniature model circus was donated. These are real things. I
What
am not
museum was
making them up.
this?
The Joplin City Museum.
Oh.
And so we were back in like these little collections of people's things. And also, they're just like displays of old rich people's furniture from the city, which, you know, that's a normal museum thing.
Yeah.
But one of the cats came, yelled at us briefly, and then left.
Didn't even want anything.
No, it didn't want pets. It didn't want anything. It just came and yelled at us and then walked away.
Fair
But I was
enough.
like, oh,
You did
okay.
something wrong.
We all looked. We were like, okay, ma'am, have a good day.
Okay. So, today I'm going to tell you a story of the Crescent Hotel. I got my information from historichotels.org, crescenthotel.com, and housebeautiful.com.
Interesting.
So, first we'll do a history. And let's see here. Okay. So I did these both today, and I was like, one of them doesn't have a very good history, and the other one has a history. Okay. So the Crescent Hotel and the story of Eureka Springs exists because of local water. So it's located in Eureka Springs, which is the place that everybody.
Yeah,
You
we've been
wouldn't.
there.
Have we?
Yeah,
I
we've been
don't
there. That was the
remember.
first time I had coleslaw, the only coleslaw I ever truly liked.
Good to know. I do not remember going there, but I mean, it
We
seems
stayed at a hotel
pretty.
that was on a slope.
It seems pretty, and I think a lot of
Had a pool.
people from St. Louis go there.
Yeah, people like to go down there. There's also that like crazy church that's just glass is by it.
I don't remember that either.
It's really
Anyway,
pretty.
So, more than 60 springs are in and around the Eureka Springs downtown area.
That's too many.
They were often visited by thousands of tourists in the late 19th century. In 1884, Isaac S. Taylor was commissioned to build a luxurious hotel high up on a cliff that overlooked the heart of Eureka Springs. Around $298,000 was spent to construct the building. I didn't put a dollar sign, so I was really confused at where that was going. Irish stonemasons carved and assembled 18-inch thick blocks of limestone from a White River quarry 10 miles from the construction site.
That's far.
Yeah.
Especially when they're in a mountain. Uh-huh. They're just on a mountain. Like, there's stone there.
After almost 2 years of construction, the Crescent Hotel was complete. They had their grand opening gala on May 20th, 1886, in what is now their crystal dining room. Hundreds of well-dressed guests danced across the hardwood floors, sipping fine wine and noshing on delectable treats. One of the signature dishes served at the party was Crab Lorenzo, which is a meal that is still served at the hotel today.
That's fun. I don't know. We should really go stay here, because it is just like a nice weekend trip.
I know, and it looks pretty. So the hotel was purchased by the Frisco Railroad Company in 1905, but when the railroad saw a continuous decline in their occupancy in the off-season, a group of concerned residents encouraged it to lease the structure as a dormitory. So, in 1908, the Crescent College and Conservatory for Young Women opened for, quote, fine young ladies, and it soon became one of the most exclusive boarding academies in Arkansas. Okay, yeah. I mean, I guess I didn't even say at the beginning, this is Eureka Springs, Arkansas, where this is located.
No, you did. Didn't,
I mean, I did, but not, like, when I introduced the place.
No, that's true, you didn't. I think it's because I pre-asked you where the places were for, like, organization purposes.
Okay, so the Great Depression caused the college to close completely in 1934, and then the hotel remained operational, but only during the summer months, kind of like, what is it, the Stanley Hotel?
Yeah, the Stanley Hotel in Colorado.
Yeah. So, in 1937, a charlatan who called himself Doctor purchased the Crescent Hotel and converted it to Baker's Cancer Curing Hospital.
Gosh, he's an evil person.
He nationally advertised a strict regimen of fresh air, healthy food, and exercise as the basis for his cancer treatments. He accompanied the treatments with the use of an elixir that mainly consisted of alcohol and watermelon. I'm sorry. It's not funny.
Here's the thing, I'm very familiar with this story.
I'm
not. The watermelon gets me every time.
I'm not. I think I've heard of this, but I didn't know this was the place it happened.
For a second, I thought I was grossly misremembering something, even though I knew I wasn't, because you weren't to the cancer doctor yet. Because that was like the epitome of the Crescent Hotel is the cancer doctor and his watermelon elixir. And he was like charging buku bucks for it.
It's just too funny. And yeah, so obviously this didn't work, and many people died while receiving Baker's therapy.
Shocking.
Baker had a thing for purple and painted many sections of the hospital purple, and today the chimneys still remain that color. He wore purple shirts and ties and also drove a purple car. I just feel like I needed to add that in because I was like, what? What?
Here's the thing. I recently heard about an individual who likes to recolor their life every so often.
And what does this mean?
It means, like, okay, right now everything needs to be blue and black. So we'll re-put the tape on all of my golf clubs in blue and black. We'll color this thing in with Sharpie so that it isn't having this other color on it. It's just black. We'll buy all of these tools in this color set and sell the old tools. And it's fascinating to me to both have that much money and that impulse is
That would never happen insane. To me, I don't believe.
I couldn't afford that.
I mean, our room was painted that green for years.
No, yeah.
Anyway, yeah, no, that could never happen to me. But yeah, so I really didn't read that much into this guy because I was doing paranormal and not the true crime part.
Yeah.
But anyway, justice caught up to Baker.
He would be a great true crime story to tell later.
I know, that's why I was like, well, maybe one of us will want to cover it. Anyway, justice caught up to Baker, who was arrested for fraud and imprisoned in Leavenworth Federal Prison in 1940. A friend of Baker's began running the hotel shortly after his trial, but eventually turned it over to a group of Chicago-based businessmen about 6 years later. So this guy ran the hotel for quite a long time, I feel like. So over the years, the hotel changed hands many times. Eventually, Marty and Elise Roniak purchased the business in 1997. They did many renovations and restored the hotel to its former glory. They relaunched as the 1889 Crescent Hotel and Spa.
I'd stay there.
I know, it seems really nice.
It does makes me think of the Radium Springs Hotel that's in, like, middle of nowhere, Randolph County, Missouri. Its thing was it had radium in the water, which is a bona fide cancer treatment. And you could actually go there and, like, get something that might help you a little bit depending on your cancer level. Ooh, heck no.
Why?
There's absolutely nothing in Randolph County, Missouri. Well. Except for one of the worst human beings I ever met in my life.
Oh. Who?
Just a landowner who yelled at us. Because he didn't understand the concept of sewer easements.
I think that story's in here somewhere.
Oh, for sure is. I think the radium thing's even in here. But it just makes me think, it's like, there were old-timey things you could do with springs.
No, it
was none of the things he was doing.
No. Well, and he wasn't even like, come here for the healing water. He was like, come here for my watermelon alcohol.
Exactly. That was the weirdest thing. It's like, he didn't even try to sell the springs. He was trying to sell his snake oil. Anyway, it's not about him.
No, it reminds me of like Crazy Water, Mineral Wells, Texas, and all the other hotels that are so sad because they were so cool and grand and great with their springs.
When people really like their springs.
But I feel like people can still benefit from springs.
I think problem is some of those springs don't
run anymore.
I think the ones in the Crescent Hotel area do. And I think the ones at, like, the Elms Hotel, north of Kansas City. I know. I think those still run. But I'm not sure that... I don't think the one... I think that's in Waco where the Crazy Water is. I don't know.
Isn't it literally Mineral Wells, Texas?
Oh, it might be Mineral Wells, Texas. Anyway, wherever that is, I don't think it runs enough for
the industry the water.
They used to have, but that's not enough to run for springs because you have to have that water going at a certain rate.
It tastes real weird. I mean, I love all the old minerally springs.
I know, they're great.
Hotels. I think they're the coolest, and they looked the coolest.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
we should just start doing like a sister trip. Just hit up all the hotel all the mineral spring
Maybe
hotels
that still really exist. Healthy.
Like, always pay for the spa treatment.
My arthritis.
Help your eczema.
My joints. Yeah, that's true. Okay, so on to the hauntings. So, the Crescent Hotel has been called America's most haunted hotel by Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures. But it made sure to say that it was by those two people, which kind of I thought was funny.
Nobody else thinks that.
We're not officially, but here's some people that called us that. Okay. This hotel was built with a lot of limestone, which we've heard before from other episodes, that it's supposed to amplify paranormal happenings, you know, whatever. I just thought that we'd add that in there because they talked about it a lot, and I was like, well, I'll say it, I guess. So, but also, they didn't say anything about water.
Water is also supposed to amplify paranormal happenings.
I know, but that's why I thought it was funny. I was like, okay, well, you'll just skip over that. Anyway.
The reason limestone is supposed to do that is because of how it was made in the concept of the water and the sediment.
Yeah.
That's how I understand it, at least.
Pretty sure. But I thought it was funny that they just mentioned the limestone and not the water that's there. So, year-round, the hotel hosts paranormal thrill seekers. Over 35,000 people will take the ghost tour annually, which I feel like is a lot.
Yeah, that is a lot.
That's especially a lot of
people
for a small
going
town.
To that town. Yeah.
So there's even a Facebook group called the Crescent Hotel Ghost Tours where members share thousands of their pictures and paranormal experiences while visiting the hotel, which I think that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
Annually, the hotel hosts the Eureka Springs Paranormal Weekend. One weekend, the founder of the Ozarks Paranormal Society, Larry Flaxman, attended. He noted that, quote, "The rich history of the Crescent Hotel, including the unscrupulous acts of Norman Baker and the physical, emotional, and mental pain of his cancer patients who occupied the Crescent during its time as a hospital, has left an indelible mark." I can't even talk. Has left an
Where are you?
Indelible. has left an indelible mark. I'm going to have to keep that in because it's too funny how many times I messed up that one word. Okay, so hauntings are common in locations where there has been extreme trauma and tragedy, and the long history of tragedies at this property has lent itself to producing an environment highly conducive for paranormal activity and making the Crescent Hotel America's most haunted hotel.
Goodness gracious.
That's what he
you
said.
Were just, no, you were just so out of breath. That was that.
I didn't take a breath that whole time I was trying to read it because I thought I'd mess up again. Okay, so at the 2021 Paranormal Weekend, a full body apparition was caught on camera with a laser grid. And it's kind of a good picture. I can post it on Instagram for everybody. It was on their website. The picture was taken during an investigation by an amateur investigator in the Crystal Dining Room. And the location of it is where there's often said to be, a figure reported at the spot sitting on the windowsill. Like other people, they see it without a camera, I would assume.
Mm-hmm.
There is a spot on the third floor where the hotel connects to an annex building onto the hotel, that was built onto the hotel when it was a hospital.
Mm-hmm.
This area has been said to be a portal to the other side.
Fun.
Many guests have become faint, some even passing out briefly at the same spot, which is part of their nightly ghost tour. The occurrences go in spurts, many happening over, like, several weeks or months, and then none at all for a long time, which is kind of interesting.
Here's what I would say it is. I think there's a weird fault line situation, and sometimes it's just releasing gases.
Could be. The guests will turn pale, fall against, and then slide down the wall in this spot.
And I will now think that is a reason for a lot of places having that after going to Delphi and learning about that and how people didn't know that fault existed until like 20 years ago. They thought it was all just sort of made up oral history. And then it was real. And it actually did release like crazy people gas that produced these feelings and these oracles. So now I think it's entirely possible there's fault lines everywhere that are briefly releasing gases.
Yeah, but the thing is, now with, like, modern buildings, don't you think, like, detectors would detect that kind of thing?
Here's the thing, no, because they're only detecting certain chemicals and certain gases and such, and the things that faults are sometimes releasing are not going to be top priority.
Well, you can look it up and see if it's a fault line.
They might not know. They might not know because they did not know there was a fault line in Delphi.
You could see it.
I could go down there and find the fault line, is what you're saying?
I guess.
Because that's what they had to do. A geologist loosely found it and sort of thought everybody knew, but nobody knew. That's the real story of the Delphi fault line.
I found something and I thought everybody here knew about it.
Yeah, a geologist is talking to like one of like the foremost archaeologists for Delphi, and he's like, "What? You have to show me!" Because that meant everything was real. Because before that, it wasn't real. They had to have proof that something was happening that was releasing gases, and they didn't have it until that random geologist is like, "Yeah, you goofy guys, it's over here."
Didn't everybody know this? Okay, so in 2019, there was, and it said, a certified archaeological dig done.
Okay.
Which makes me think maybe it wasn't a certified archaeological dig.
Okay, here, I was going to say, it's really, really weird to phrase it that way.
I know.
You know how Dad did that work in the Pythian Hotel? The Pythian Castle in Springfield, Missouri?
Yes.
I would 100% think that is how they would phrase that work at that castle. So I'm thinking of someone who's so unfamiliar with the concept of archaeology.
I just put it in there because I was like, just in case it wasn't like
It was just some fun people saying, "Can we dig in your basement?"
Yeah.
That's also possible.
It was done on the hotel grounds where they found hundreds of bottles of Baker's Secret Formula, the alcohol watermelon.
Fun. I love that.
As well as jars containing medical specimens that had been surgically removed from his patients.
That's a dream. That is
After
an absolute
this,
dream of mine.
Staff noticed an uptick in activity in the morgue. I don't think it's a morgue anymore. It could be, because I actually don't know if they renovated
Maybe
the wing
that
got added on to the hospital. Yeah. I don't know. A dark figure has been seen in the morgue, and there has been an increase in cold spots reported and people being touched. So after they found all of those specimens.
Body bits.
Yeah. I thought that was fun. I love that.
That's I've never heard that before. That's the best thing that's ever been told.
It's pretty creepy. So here are some of the other reported experiences. Room 218, where Michael, an Irish stonemason who fell to his death when he was building the hotel, is known to still frequent this room. He doesn't seem to be malicious at all, That's just his room. Theodora, a cancer patient, is known to be seen fumbling for her keys outside of room 419 and also has been known to tidy up for guests when they leave the room.
That's nice.
And I always love the ghosts that, like, either clean up after somebody or do something in spite of, like, the hotel guests. I always think those are the funniest ones. Brecky, a 4-year-old child of Richard and Mary Breckenridge, which I don't know if that was his actual name.
And they just...
I know, when I typed Breckenridge, I was like, they did not
Brecky
name their
Breckenridge.
Kid. Yeah, I was like, they did not name their kid that. I bet he's Thompson, like, is their actual last
Richard
name,
Richard Breckenridge Thompson Jr., and they call him Brecky.
Yeah, but I was like, I don't know. But anyway, so he apparently died in the hotel due to complications from appendicitis. He has been seen throughout
really
the hotel,
young.
Often bouncing a ball.
That's really young. Appendicitis.
I know. But also, I don't know if that's completely accurate.
That's fair. Turns out he was 14.
Yeah.
That happens a lot, though, when you go and research. Like, if you go and look for real... We know these people exist, but we're sort of unsure how they work in the legend. And you go and find them, and like, oh, yeah, they died when they were 28,
yeah.
Not 6. They were real. They did die in a similar manner, but...
Oh, where was I? Oh, bouncing ball. Okay, so Dr. John Fremont Ellis... The hotel's former in-house doctor during the late 19th century is often seen, or you can smell his cherry pipe tobacco near his former office, which is now room 212. Morris was known as the hotel general manager for 21 years and later buried on the hotel property and is still regularly seen and heard around the hotel. He was a cat.
I was like, this is a weird way to phrase all this, but now him being a cat... I understand.
But yeah, that's the end of the Crescent Hotel.
Gosh, I love that
and
they
I
found
thought,
all those jars.
I know, I was like, it's kind of boring, but also it's I kind of like this story. Short and sweet. And
would you like to...
Good ghosts.
Put a shirt on your dog?
Sissy, would you like a
shirt?
I found
one that I think would work. You can tie it up so it's a little tight. Would you let me feel better in some clothes? I don't know if she feels better.
No, I can't tell. I think I might need to get a t-shirt.
She looks cute.
I know. Good girl. A summertime tank top for Sissy.
Okay. I'm going to cover what is sort of a two-parter. They're directly related, and you have to listen to this one for the second one to make sense, but they can also be, I guess, independent. It just makes more sense if you know the first half.
Uh-huh.
So it's the Knights of the Golden Circle. Which is like a fraternal
National
organization.
Treasure.
Yeah.
Well, what was theirs? The Knights of...
I think it literally might have been the Knights of the Golden Circle.
No, it's the Knights Templar, who then formed a new brotherhood, the Freemasons.
Yeah, no, that's a whole different thing.
Yep. But it sounds familiar to me. Why is
well,
it
yeah, I mean, the Freemasons are also in part of this story. They're a separate fraternity. Anyway, so the Knights of the Golden Circle... My sources are Wikipedia, Britannica.com, and Legends of America.
Da, da, da.
Da, da, da. So George Washington Lafayette Bickley. His parents really gave him like a very grand name.
Not George Washington himself.
George Washington Lafayette himself. George Washington Lafayette Bickley was born in Russell County, Virginia in July of 1823. His father died when he was about 7, and shortly thereafter, Bickley ran away to start a life of adventure around the country.
When he was 7?
Yeah, you know, when you run away and start your life of adventure around the country.
Not me.
By 1850, so how old is he by then? 33, 43, 27. So he's 27, so no clue what he did for the last 20 years. But in 1850, he pops up as a practicing physician in Tazewell, Virginia.
Wow.
I am positive this man did not study medicine.
Oh.
He is just... go. He decided
he's
this
like,
is something he could totally swing himself
like
as.
The other guy in my story.
But he's also... Two stories of fake doctors. So in Tazewell,
allegedly.
He started the local historical society. And he wrote... The History of the Settlement and Indian War of Tazewell County, Virginia. So he's, like, into local history.
Yeah, but was it accurate?
No.
Okay.
I was half like, the stuff okay, historians right now aren't accurate.
He wrote this, but did he know anything about it?
No, he's just going for it. Well. So a year later, he moved to Cincinnati, Ohio, to work as a professor of Materia Medica Therapeutics and Medical Botany at the Eclectic Medical Institute, an institution teaching a form of alternative medicine known as eclectic medicine.
You know, wouldn't it be nice if I, as a 20-something-year-old, could just go become a professor because I felt like it?
As a 20-year-old loosely becoming a professor of medicine, even the, here's the thing, it is weird alternative medicine, but also medicine was not real in 1850, so anything could have become real medicine. Right now they're just experimenting with everything.
They still are.
Yeah, they definitely still are. So, eclectic medicine was a form of medical treatments popular during the last half of the 18th and the first half of the 19th centuries, or hundreds, 1900s. Those century and hundred, different thing. So the last half of the 1800s, first half of the 1900s, and it focused on botanical remedies and physical therapies. So, like, there's stuff that could work here.
Yeah.
If they were doing it, right?
And using the right things.
Using the right things and all that. This particular institute was first opened in Worthington, Ohio in 1833, but their local body snatching tendencies led to the Resurrection Riot in 1839, and then they got kicked out of town, so they moved to Cincinnati.
Okay.
I wish I knew more about the Resurrection Riot. Look it up, and it didn't have a Wikipedia page, and I said, I have too much to do today. So maybe we'll go back to that later.
The Great Resurrection Riot.
Well, I think, like, the topic of body snatching across at least the U.S., and also I know they're doing it everywhere else, but, like...
Yeah.
That would be, like, a fun...
Yeah.
...overarching topic one day. So their primary goal seemed to be opposing popular medicine at the time, just for the sake of it. I don't know if it was for good or for bad, but they decided what was ever happening then, we were going to go a different way, which is... They were in a phase of experimentation. There's nothing fundamentally wrong with what they were doing. They were stealing bodies, though, and that's not cool. No. But so was everybody else.
Yeah.
Like, literally everybody. No one knew what a body was or how it worked. It was all insane. Whatever a human was, nobody knew.
No.
They all were them. They didn't know what they were, though.
Aliens.
So, Bickley got this position at this institute by claiming he had graduated from the 1842 class of the University of London, and he had studied under John Elliotson, a renowned English physician, who even personally signed his diploma. There are a few obvious issues with this claim. Bickley's name is not on the records of the university. I think we all could have guessed that. It was impossible for Elliotson to have signed his diploma or for Bickley to ever learn from him, because he did resign from the school in 1838.
That's too good.
Which is, you know, a few years before then.
Yeah.
And here, mind you, doctors are not going to, like, 10 plus years of school. They're going for, like, two max during this time period.
Yeah.
So the fact that he resigned 4 years before he graduated means they...
Red flag.
It's very unlikely they ever, like, crossed paths at school. Not to mention he didn't go there. So I keep on making it larger and larger on accident, but I'm not complaining. In 1853, Bickley wrote Atalaska, or The Strange and Mysterious Family of the Cave of Genreva, an anti-slavery novel.
Okay.
And I don't know if that was written wrong, because everything he does after this is definitely the opposite of anti-slavery.
Interesting.
Or if he had a change of heart in the wrong way. Or if he was a con man to the core and figured out where the most money was.
Yeah.
I don't know. He also wrote The Principles of Scientific Botany. So these are two books he wrote in 1853. Can you imagine writing two books in a year? And all of it being just things he is making up?
No.
but sounding professional on.
He must have some kind of, like, extreme ADHD or something.
He is just all over the place, right? He's
just on to something new every
day. Later in 1854, so a year after he writes all those books, he's being hounded by creditors in Cincinnati. So he starts traveling through the East and South, promoting an expedition to seize Mexico.
Stop it.
And make it a new slave state.
Stop!
We should all know that Mexico has made slavery illegal for a few years now. It's not gonna like the concept of being taken over or being made a slave place again.
Yeah.
He found significant support in Texas, shocking, as it was stolen from Mexico because the Americans that moved there wanted slavery. That's what the Alamo is about, by the way, wanting to steal land from Mexico to make it a slave state because Mexico had made slavery illegal. Everyone should remember the Alamo for that reason.
You know, to be fair, I know not a single thing about the Alamo.
Now you know. It's about keeping slavery in Texas.
I can't assume most history down south is good history, so...
Anyway, in 1854, they founded 32 chapters of the Knights of the Golden Circle in Texas, which is the just Texas. He was founding them other places too, and this was in 1 year. They were called castles, these chapters, and I think that's very funny.
This reminds me of the Knights of the Mormons. Golden Circle
founded. There's some parallels to the amount of con artistness of all of this.
Mental illness about it is what I
and how
say.
Quickly it pops up. So, where was I?
Castles.
Yes, they opened 32 castles in 1 year in just the state of Texas alone. That's not including all the other states he's proselytizing to. Anyway, the concept of wanting to seize Mexico to make a new slave state is, like, one of the fundamental things of this fraternity he's making, which is the Knights of the Golden Circle, what we're talking about here today.
Great.
Anyway, that's an absurd density, even though it's a big state.
Yeah.
So the Knights of the Golden Circle was a secret society founded in 1854 with the goal of making a new country called the Golden Circle where slavery would be legal.
Oh.
It was to be composed of 25 states, and I understand this to be, like, areas, not U.S. states that are they're going to pull out or something. Just, there's going to be 25 states, there's going to be... You know, in Mexico, and da-da-da. Anyway, these states were going to be the U.S. states that were going to secede, along with what would be the border states during the actual Civil War. So every state that did secede and every state that was a border state were going to be part of this new country.
Okay.
The entire country of Mexico, all of the countries in the rest of Central America, all of the Caribbean islands, and portions of coastal South America that were touching the Caribbean. That was going to be the Golden Circle. Where slavery was legal and all of it. It should be noted that almost every single one of those locations, save for, like, Cuba and Puerto Rico, no longer had legal slavery. So initially, they wanted these territories to be annexed by the U.S. and just increase the number of slave states. But this was, and then therefore increasing, you know, the power of wealthy slaveholders and the upper class down in the South, because those are, you know, in the Civil War. But after increased anti-slavery sentiments, after the Dred Scott decision in 1857, they switched their plan, and it was going to be new country. So for 3 years there, they're like, we're just going to make a giant mega U.S. and just have more slave states. And then they said, no, we're starting over. New country, baby. Everything that I list here, yeah. The only places in the Americas that still had slavery at the point that they're requesting to do all this is Cuba, Puerto Rico, Brazil, and the U.S. Every other portion of North and South America had abolished it by 1854, 1857, especially. Just so you know, everyone else was done with it. We were late to the party.
Yeah.
I have, like, a whole thing describing everything I've already talked about in bits and bobbles. I wanted to make sure it got said. So in the spring of 1860, the group made its first attempt to invade Mexico through Texas.
How many were in this group?
We'll get there. But not much came of it because Bickley never showed up with the forces he was supposed to assemble in New Orleans.
Of course.
So it was like some of the local guys from the local castles were like, "We're ready. Where is our leader? Where are the men? Oh, it's not happening, is it?" So they obviously weren't successful because they never really amassed a crew. So this resulted in his expulsion from the group. So Bickley's been kicked out.
This reminds me of storming Area 51.
Right. No one showed up.
We should have made it a bigger thing. That would have been so much more fun if we would have actually done that. I say we like I was there. I was not there, to be fair. I was waiting readily for social media to post about it.
So Bickley fails to bring people. He's expelled from the group that he created. He is then reinstated just like a few months later during a convention in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Annoying.
So, before I continue with the story of the Knights of the Golden Circle, I'll finish Bickley's story because his does not continue with the fraternity. So he left the KGC in 1863 to join up with the Confederate Army, working as a surgeon. You know, because
he's a doctor.
That's definitely who you want as a fake doctor. At this point, he's probably done enough things to be semi-competent. I still don't trust him.
This guy is wild.
So he briefly did this surgeon thing, leaves shortly after, going to Tennessee, where he's arrested a month later in Indiana as a Confederate spy. He remains in prison until the end of the war, and he dies in 1867.
Nice.
Here's the thing. I think he probably led the exact life he dreamed he would as a 7-year-old.
That's a lot of
just adventuring around, you know, doing some stuff and things. So now we get to some other stuff that the KGC does their history. So several members of James Buchanan, a president, his administration.
I was like, that name sounds familiar.
Were members of the order. This is the president before Lincoln.
Okay.
The Secretary of War, John Floyd, who is a cabinet member. The Secretary of the Treasury, Hal Cobb, another cabinet member. Remember, cabinet members are appointed directly by the president.
Okay.
There's no other voting involved in this. I think. Maybe they're approved now. Maybe they're approved then. I don't know, but the president picks them.
I don't know. I think the last time I had to learn about this stuff was 5th grade, so.
Yeah, that's why I'm not giving you the firm answer, because I don't remember either. Either way, they were members, and so was the vice president, John Breckinridge. So we have to assume James Buchanan is at least familiar. If that many people in his immediate vicinity are members.
I don't trust anybody.
There's also Virginia Senator James M. Mason. I don't know if we even talk about him later. I think he was, like, more buttered up in a section of the story that I did not end up telling, and that's why he got added on, because I decided that was boring. Anyway, there's a lot of higher-ups.
Yeah.
Too many, in the federal government that were in this, let's secede and create a new slave country while also colonizing just everything south of us.
I would say much like today.
Yeah. So.
Burn it all down. That's what I had to say.
The order, as in the KGC, planned to stop Lincoln from taking office while they were still members of the cabinet. So some of the above people were like, we're going to stop it. He's not going to become president because we're going to kill him. So they planned to capture Lincoln in Baltimore, Maryland.
Lincoln. Nobody was here for him. He could have done so much.
He did so much.
He could have done more.
That's true.
So, and he was gonna do
but
more.
Yeah, their plan was to capture Lincoln when he was traveling through Baltimore on his way to Washington, D.C. Then they were going to go and occupy Washington, D.C. and they were going to install Breckinridge, the vice president at the time, as president. This was their whole plan. I don't know how they would have they're taking over and installing a dictatorship is what we should all realize they were planning on doing. You're not president if you're installed because you're supposed to be voted in to be president.
Yeah.
So. I went too far up. So, Floyd, while still in office, worked to move munitions and men south from before the inauguration in preparations for secession. So he's like, we're going to take all this, these bullets. We're going to take all these guys. We're going to bring them down here. And we're going to use them to separate from the north. He's doing everything he can in his power to make this work while he still has all the leverage that he does. Because remember, he's the Secretary of War.
Yeah.
He was, however, found out. And this led to great distrust of secret societies. As there was now a confirmed plot to overthrow the federal government.
Nice.
That was directly related to a secret society, because the secret society planned it, you know?
Yeah.
Which is, it's funny, because that suspicion is something that people still hold today. I still don't trust them.
I don't ever.
So, just real quick, history lesson, Bingley was not the inventor of the concept of the South seceding. It was Robert Barnwell Rhett who first published stuff about wanting or supporting the concept of splitting away in 1844. Rhett did agree with Bingley, though, and liked the idea of the Golden Circle. So, which makes sense. That tracks.
Yeah.
For some reason, it didn't seem like they should be able to interact in my brain, but they are definitely doing things at the same time.
Yeah.
So. I just wanted to make sure he wasn't considered the father of the entire movement.
Yeah.
This guy is, though. Rhett is considered the where it begins.
Okay.
So an inspiration for Bingley, probably. So, the Civil War. Obviously, the KGC was making moves for a while towards secession, so the Civil War is really, you know, where it comes to fruition, this goal of leaving and then being able to create a mega country to the south. So about on February 15th, 1861, 2 months before the war began, the KGC rode 550 men, 150 of which were members of the KGC, to the federal arsenal in San Antonio, Texas. After a few days of what I understood to be fairly peaceful I really think they just rode there, showed up, said, "This is ours now, please." Because I don't think anybody died. There was no, like, firefight. It was just, the arsenal was just handed over.
Okay.
By United States Army Brevet Major General David E. Twiggs, who was appointed as a major general in the Confederate Army 3 months later.
Mm.
That's why I don't think anything happened. I think they showed up and pretended to, you know, not give in.
I'm shocked by this.
Oh, no. What will I do?
Here are the keys.
Yep.
I didn't hand them to you. You took them forcefully from me.
During the beginning of the war, the KGC put efforts into taking over New Mexico territory, which they briefly did with success, but then didn't anymore for some reason. I don't know if people like took it back or if they couldn't like put any more effort into that anymore. They decided they didn't like New Mexico. I don't know what the reasoning was.
There's nothing here but sand and dirt.
But that was like a big focus for them. They were immediately going to take over the state while no one was looking, and then they like sort of did a little bit of that.
Yeah.
They didn't even get the whole state. So in
they got halfway through.
It's a really big state.
Is the thing.
So in 1863, which is when Bingley's no longer involved, the KGC rebrands themselves as the Order of American Knights. And in 1864, they rebrand themselves again as the Order of the Sons of Liberty, with Ohio politician Clement L. Vallandigham. It was a lot of letters. I got overwhelmed. Who was most prominent
of
the Copperheads, which I forget exactly what they were. They were some kind of movement that was not necessarily related to a fraternity.
I've heard of that,
it was like a political party.
Yeah.
I don't remember what they supported specifically.
Not good things.
No, not good things.
Their name was Copperhead.
Yeah. anyway, he was made Supreme Commander.
Oh.
Because, you know, like Bingley's in jail and quit the order to be a military surgeon.
Well, what year was this? Was he dead by now?
No, he was still alive. This is the year he quit.
Okay.
And then was arrested. So the Order of the Sons of Liberty might sound familiar because the name was stolen from the Revolutionary War era group that, like, you know,
can't even be original.
Pulled off that Well, the purpose of rebranding was to make other people want to join because they remember the concept
of that.
They're like, well, they were the quote-unquote good guys because they're the ones who initiated the revolution and separated us from England, so we're going to steal that idea. They're not the only group to have done it. A lot of people have used that name. So at this point in time, the KGC starts working in the northern states to encourage desertion, prevent enlistment, and resist the draft. So now they're like, it's not, we can't fight hard enough down here. We need to prevent them from getting more guys. That was, when you get to that point, you know you're not doing hot.
Yeah.
So the leaders of the KGC, after the war, were tried for treason for obvious reasons. They were found guilty. And then the U.S. Supreme Court overturned this decision.
Huh.
Sounds familiar.
Real interesting.
They were never on our side.
Ain't that funny? Ain't that silly?
So the KGC is obviously a direct inspiration and or guide for the KKK that later appears.
Yeah.
The KKK appears...
Scroll up for a second. Whenever you said, scroll up a little more, he became the Supreme Commander, I was like, is this the KKK?
Yeah, no, the KKK is inspired out of this group. It starts...
Makes sense.
Basically, as soon as this group folds completely, the KKK starts up, and then the KKK stops, and the KKK starts up, and the KKK stops, and the KKK starts up.
And then it just keeps going.
And then now it's just present. And that's the story of the Knights of the Golden Circle and how weird the background happenings of the Civil War were. Just
it really to get there. Reminds me a lot of the Mormons.
Yeah, there's similarities. Yeah. I think any big movement started by a con man is going to feel that way though.
Maybe I should become a con man.
Here's the thing, we're gonna learn more about KGC and some of its more prominent members and some of the crazy things that happened
in the next episode.
Because there
this is our first two-parter.
I guess it is a two-parter. It's not, here's the thing, it could be so much more. I think I'm done with the KGC for a while, though, after these two stories.
Fair enough.
It was overwhelming.
I can't even imagine trying to take notes on this.
To
just... It's like Dime Bag Daryl.
I understand, the concept of there's a lot of things going on in the background that I will never get to know about, including now. But this is like some straight up, the CIA taking out the, democratically elected communist president of Chile.
Yeah.
A real thing that happened, but feels like should not be real in the slightest.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that.
No, I know. And for it to be happening this long ago. In the background
is
what's so wild to me. I know it does. I know it does. I'm aware of it in the back of my mind, but it's so much to comprehend.
I'll tell you it all.
No, you can't do that. Now they won't hire you.
I wasn't going to join them anyway. I don't want to be a part of their club. I'll start my own.
All right, apparently it's very easy.
That's why I said I should become a con man, but instead of doing bad things, I'll just be taking down the group. Which I guess everybody would think that's a bad thing.
But they're taking down the government here.
Okay, well, we're going to record another episode right after this. I guess see you soon. Try not to kill anybody and don't mess with Ouija boards. Goodbye.
Bye.